Welcome to Take the Red Pill,
where we explore the realities within our reality.
We are your hosts, David Deere
and Donald Dalton. This week, David and I are going to take a little trip into the world of belief. And David, this is a topic that you had suggested, and I think it's just one of those that, for me and the people that I've been associating with this week, have had a lot of experience where it's been coming up a lot for us. So I'm going to throw it over to you and kind of get your take on this starting of the whole topic of belief.
Well, I do believe that belief is the foundation of just about everything to one degree or another. Was it Descartes that said, I think therefore I am?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can't really be here if you don't believe you are, in a way. I mean, people do believe, people say that, well, there you go. I mean, we'll be saying believe all day. You know, I believe.
It's I believe.
Yeah. It's kind of the foundation of, well, what people think of as tangible is that the belief comes from the proof, where I think the proof really comes from the belief. And this group that I'm part of, we're talking about healing, of course, just as you were in your group. And what we were saying is that if a person doesn't believe in the source of healing, it's a lot more difficult for them to accept that healing. They have to accept the healing and they have to want the healing. And they have to believe in the healing. If they don't, it's a lot of people say, you know, that energy healing stuff doesn't work. Well, that's because they believe it doesn't work and there you go. So it's kind of a, I do believe that, yeah, we better get used to that.
It's one of those words you can't really, I don't think there is a synonym to use that would be appropriate here.
Well, you know, no, I mean, but there doesn't need to be. It's interesting of how much it's permeated into our conversation. Well, I believe that this is this. What's the derivation of the word? It's like a combination between be and live.
Yes, exactly.
You know, I don't know what the actual derivation is, but I think that's would be my guess. We'll have to look it up. I'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah, and I think when we first started this this whole podcast, that was one of the things that we were very, very cautious about because we didn't want to be like, this is how it is. This is the only way it is. You know, we wanted to be more of, this is my opinion, this is David's opinion, this is, you know, our belief system.
Right, exactly.
But the whole idea with belief is completely centered on a perception of what you believe, literally, of what you believe is possible and what is real. And one of the most profound examples of this that I've ever seen, witnessed, or heard is the story from the movie What the Bleep Do We Know? And they're talking about where Native Americans, they didn't see these ships, these European ships with the huge sails coming in. Only the shamans were able to see it.
Right.
Because the shamans were able to be open to whatever happens here and, you know, traveling, you know, in the astral world and seeing all kinds of things. And then all of a sudden the shamans explained to it and described to the other people, this is what I'm seeing. And then all of a sudden they were like, oh, it is now in our consciousness. We can now perceive it because we understand what you are saying. And now we see these ships.
Right. Which, you know, it's interesting. People say, would say that you believe what you perceive. And I say, just like in that example, you perceive what you believe.
Well, I think everybody has had instances where you've been reading along, and if you read a lot, you get to a point where you can actually read sentences and words pretty quickly. And they have done study after study after study, and they've done experiments after experiments after experiments where you don't really need to see the whole word. You can actually see just the, like, I think the tops of the word, the top half of the word, and still put the words, put the sentence together. If you have the first letter and the last letter of the word correct, then it doesn't matter what position the letters in between those are. Your brain makes them, puts them together because it perceives and believes that they're supposed to be a certain way, and it's relying on past experiences of that pattern that it has read that word before to put these, you know, basically put the letters back together in the same way so that you can understand it.
Yeah, that I've seen examples of that where they do the whole paragraph saying you can read this whole. I mean, at a glance, it looks like jumbled nonsense, and then you start kind of scanning through it, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, well, this makes complete sense.
Oh, yeah.
And you're saying that that's based on the belief. Some people would say that that's based on memory and the association and neurolinguistic pathways that are created.
It's not based on solely on belief. It's based on perception, which I think is, you know, kind of like the big precursor for belief. Because from my perspective, you know, if you are unable to perceive something, then it's very difficult to believe something.
Well, you know, I think we're going to get in a lot of arguments from there are a lot of people who would argue this.
Okay.
There's a lot of people who would say that, well, if you believe you can walk through walls, then you should be able to walk through walls.
Exactly. And one of the best movies I saw along these lines is The Men Who Stare at Goats.
Oh, okay.
And that was just completely well done movie. I found out that it's not for everybody. Some people watch it and it's just like, oh my goodness, I just wasted 2 hours of my time. And then there's people like me, like, I could watch that movie over and over again and just be like, oh, it's just so well done. It's like Shakespeare to me.
I was right in the middle on that movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was like, you know, it was interesting, but I wasn't bowled over by it.
Yeah, and I would say to... If you believe that you can walk through walls, then why don't you? I would say that you don't believe that you can walk through walls because...
Exactly.
Because, I mean, when we're born into this world, this physical existence, we take a lot of time learning how things work. And we get a lot of cues from people that have been here and are here, like parents and friends and teachers and schools and all this other stuff, of how things work. Oh, if I am 2 years old and I touch a hot pot on the stove of boiling water or something, then it's like, ow, that's painful. My reality is stuff on stove can hurt. Okay, that is my perception. From now on, I can learn to be careful when I'm working on stuff with stove. And it goes into, you know, a whole bunch of other things where you spend so many years learning how the world works, so that the idea of walking through walls is one of those like, no, that's not how the world works. And your perception is so hardwired to believe that that's not possible, that to completely unravel that whole wiring, that whole conditioning, it would be extremely difficult. But if you're able to do it, I think it'd be extremely freeing and cathartic.
Well, there's two points to this. The first one is that I think it was an Abraham quote, which is somebody had said, you know, Abraham, for those who don't know, Abraham is the channeled entity from Esther and Jerry Hicks, specifically Esther Hicks. But
yeah, and Jerry Hicks has
and the late
on.
Jerry Hicks, yeah, may he rest in peace. But the quote, and I'm going to paraphrase it, is something about Abraham saying, well, you can do anything that you believe you can do. And somebody says, well, why can't we grow a limb back, you know? And Abraham said, because you don't believe you can grow limbs back. It's one of these things where the logic seems kind of it's a chicken and egg game.
Mm-hmm.
In this group that I'm with, one of the things part of it is, of course, about, you know, getting the healing and all this other stuff, but also part of it is developing our psychic and intuitive abilities. And the exercises there, they're not there to teach you how to do this. All they're there to do is to allow yourself to experience and validate them. Because the more you can validate them, the more strength you have because you believe it. The idea that most of us don't have the psychic abilities, not because we don't have them, but because we don't believe we have them. And, you know, this is why the James Randis have made all their money. It's like they cross their arms and say, prove it. Well, you can't prove it, of course, because it's based on a perception that's outside of the parameters we use to prove things. So as a result of it, you have to have faith that the information you're getting is valid, and that's kind of the chicken egg thing.
Yeah, and I love the idea, the example that you mentioned in one of our previous podcasts, and I can't remember for the life of me which one it was, but on the whole idea of proof, it's like prove that you're in love.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And prove that there is love. Well, okay, everybody that I know, and I believe majority of the population of the world would say, I have experienced some form of love at some point in my life. And, you know, the James Randi people and Michael Shermer would be like, well, prove it. Like, how do I prove that I was in love? Well, my actions were like this. Well, that's just your DNA trying to, you know, propagate the species and keep it going. Like, okay, we can buy that. I look at perception and, you know, in the same way, belief, in the same way where it's just like, if you believe something to a strong enough degree, it does start to affect your perception and your judgment and your choices. And it was kind of interesting you mentioned the quote about regrowing limbs, because I think I saw on a science show about 7-8 years ago, early 2000s, where this guy in Europe had developed some kind of powder where he was trying on his cousin or something who had lost a finger working on some woodworking, and it took like 6 months, but he grew back the digits and started growing back fingernail and all that stuff. And to me, when you said that, I was just like, oh yeah, if you believe you can grow back a limb, then you can. Like, well, we were talking about, you know, just like a lizard, just naturally grow it back. Well, what's the difference? The limbs growing back one way or another.
Right, exactly. It's just what you've tapped into genetically in DNA. And if you think about it, the thing is that how many things did we do years and years and years ago, or how many things do we do now that we cannot do years and years and years ago? I've used it before in other episodes when talk about talking to somebody in China. I talked about it, you know, about somebody in China wanting to talk to somebody here in this country, and that was impossible 500 years ago, and it is now. But look, we took all these little baby steps. We had to do one little step to the next step to the next step to kind of get ourselves used to the idea of these things. We had to kind of put carts before horses, as it were.
I totally understand what you're saying. And I mean, we've talked about this in many other episodes before. It's like, you know, in the past 100 years, the technology has exploded where it's like, can you talk to somebody in China? Yeah, sure, why not? And if you talk to somebody, let's say in 1850, like, I am going to connect with my spirit of my friend David in Washington State while I am currently in Virginia. Like, well, how are you going to do that? I'm just going to, you know, do a couple clicks on the computer and boom, we're connected. Oh, you're using technology. Well, I thought you were going to, you know, connect like psychically and stuff. Well, how do you know I'm not?
Who was it that, was it Asimov? Oh, I'm going to paraphrase this again too, but for any pre-advanced society or whatever, that technology is indistinguishable from magic.
Yeah.
Do you know the quote?
Not perfectly, no. I'd have to paraphrase it too.
Well, and the interesting thing about this is that technology and advances in technology are all, and I've said this before, they're all impetuses based on something that we want, something that's appealing to us. And our belief system is very much based on that. And we affect our reality in our world more on what we believe than what we know, and that what we, and then based facts. Let's say this, for example.
Okay.
Let's say that you know a woman in Kentucky.
I do know a woman in Kentucky.
Do you?
Yes, I do.
How much of an impact does that make on the choices that you make today, knowing her?
Not a whole lot. She's my sister, so.
Oh, she's your sister.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, but do you go see stuff with family with her? Do you do family events with her?
Occasionally, yeah.
Occasionally. And it's because she's family, because you have a blood connection, because you love her, because she's your sister, right?
Exactly.
Now, imagine if instead of your sister, it was a romantic interest.
Mm.
And so what would you do? You see, what would you? So I think what I'm saying here is that what we do is we believe these things, and we believe these things because they serve us a certain way. Mm-hmm. They serve who we are. They kind of validate our existence in one way or another. Beliefs are based on that. People don't believe in God because of, you know, Christians. Let's say the Christians. They don't believe in God because it's written in a book that says God. I mean, nothing. They didn't read in a Bible there is a God, and they said, okay, I'll take that. It was their connection to being born again and all that other stuff. There was an emotional connection that really moved them strongly to believe in that. And then every choice they make is based on that compelling emotion that connected them to that belief. So to me, it's what we believe really forms our world way more than just based facts.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I think that's where perception comes in, because when your perception is expanded past the point of what it has previously been, then you can have literally a larger perception of what is possible, and therefore a larger belief system and a more evolved understanding of the universe, mm-hmm. to put it mildly.
Well, to me, it's more evolved understanding of the self and connected to the self. To me, that's what the universe is.
Oh, yeah.
But now let me ask you this.
Okay.
Let's say that you wanted to accomplish something in your life that you haven't as of yet.
Okay.
And you accepted the idea that in order to accomplish it, you had to believe it.
Mm-hmm.
But you didn't currently believe it. What would make you cross the chasm from non-belief into belief?
This goes totally with what you're talking about, where having an emotional response. And I believe, like you as well, that emotional responses are very difficult to say they're not real.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was younger, I was raised in a traditional Mormon home. My belief system was, from a spiritual standpoint, basic Mormon teachings or traditional Mormon teachings. And then I started hearing this stuff outside of the Mormon teachings. I saw commercials for Mysteries of the Unknown by Time Life Books. And, you know, this was on the commercials in, I think, the late 80s or something like that. One of the things they had on there was ghosts. And I had heard of ghosts before. I mean, you know, ooh, Casper the Friendly Ghost. And I think I even dressed up for one as in Halloween at one point. But, you know.
He was a dead baby. It's kind of disconcerting if you think about it. I mean, think of it. Casper was a baby, wasn't he? He was a little kid.
Yeah. Well,
whose idea was that? Let's make a cartoon for little kids, and it's going to be a dead boy. I'm like, what? Really? I mean, I understand the guys who had the long trails on the back of their heads, and they were fat and slovenly and or skinny and grumpy. And, yeah, okay. And you're like, okay, they can be ghosts. They can haunt. But, oh.
You know, you can definitely look at it that way, and you can perceive it that way and believe that that's not a good way, a thing to, you know, teach children. But, you know.
Well, I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm just saying it's kind of bizarre.
Oh, I personally
agree. Casper, the dead boy. The friendly dead boy. And, you know, don't worry about him. He's nice. Don't worry. He's friendly.
Of course he's friendly. He's lonely. Do you know how long he's been dead? Me neither, but apparently it's been a very long time.
I think it has. I know.
So, but so basically, I started in hearing and perceiving and these outside of what I was raised in, and this piqued my curiosity to want to investigate further. Well, what eventually happened is over the next few years, I started asking questions and was not getting answers that I felt were really helpful in any way, shape, or form. So I started to search out sources that would give me the answers that I was looking for that I felt that I could actually believe in. Well, luckily, live in a time where they had libraries and bookstores and mom who was happy to drive us to places on the weekends. And so, you know, and then of course I got old enough to where I could drive myself or go with friends. It was probably over a span of 8 years or so from when I started having the interest in the paranormal and the metaphysical to where I actually said, okay, I'm basically leaving the Mormon church because I just find it very constrictive.
Unbelievable.
I wouldn't, at that point, I would not have said that. At
Yeah,
this point,
I see.
well, you
It just
know.
it didn't work within your it wasn't validating. I guess I would say that.
Yeah, you want to talk about unbelievable, you know, it's like, okay, so there's Mormonism, there's Scientology. I mean, you can look at a bunch of different religions and say, well, okay,
But see, here's the thing about that, and I want to talk about religion for just a moment, because you can't really talk about belief without talking about religion. We did talk about religion in an
I
episode, didn't
believe
we?
you can.
Did we talk about religion?
Yes, we have.
We did. Well, you can, but why? I mean, it's kind of the elephant in the room, right? You can't invalidate anybody's religion. You can't invalidate. I watch these people. I watch the lefts and the rights and the Democrats versus the Republicans and all these people versus all these people trying to put out these facts over and over again. And I mean, I support certain things and I'm aligned with certain ideas and beliefs. However, they're mine, and I'm not going to try to convince anyone otherwise because. And I'm not even doing that on this show. I'm just talking about things that I believe. And I'm not saying that I'm right. God, I've had beliefs that are completely different than what I believe now, and I'm sure I will. I mean, my beliefs change quite a bit. Or I think they expand more than they change. I just add a new thing to the repertoire.
I
But
like that word a
everybody's
lot better too.
expand.
Expand, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I haven't invalidated it. I think that's the beauty of it. But one side always tries to invalidate the other side's belief. But if you believe something, if you no matter what it is, if you truly believe it, and I'm not talking about saying, yeah, I believe it. If your soul propels itself on that idea that this is true and valid, if it is your truth, you will find things that substantiate it without any problem. So to me, to really make an effort to try to disprove anybody's belief, a friend of mine who's really, yeah, those Christians, they're just really full of it and they don't know what they're talking about. If they realize how silly they sounded, I'm like, but they can prove to you their belief will validate for them, and they can validate, and to me, they've got to be right. But the problem is with belief is that if somebody has a completely what's seemingly opposite belief to another person, that those two beliefs can't coexist. So there's always someone like the James Randi saying, you need proof, because in the proof you can invalidate two opposing beliefs or one belief that's specious at best. So I think it's interesting that there can be several beliefs that coexist, because I believe that all beliefs are true as the believer, because they're going to make their choice and decisions and actions based on those beliefs, and they will form the world as we know it and the experiences they know it. And every experience is valid, and every experience is based on a choice of what we believe. So every belief is valid.
Oh yeah, I think that's what where it comes into a very interesting head where, especially with laws, because you have some people where this thing over here is we're really, really angry about this. We really want the stop sign on this intersection over here, and people living in a, you know, on the other side of town, they just don't really care because that intersection does not really affect their day-to-day or possibly even their monthly lives. So we have people that are coming around and saying, we want this traffic stop and we need it now and it's really important and we're going to go out and sign petitions and so we can get this right up here so we can enhance our safety. And that's totally cool and everything. I have no problem with that. But then, you know, you have people on the other side of the town that's saying, you know, we don't like the way these stoplights are timed because this one stoplight is like 4 minutes from red light to green light, and that's just too long. We're not happy with that. So all these people go to the city council and say, we want this stoplight time different. We want a stop sign here on this intersection. And I believe that those two things can coexist in the same city, like what you're talking about. I think what when it becomes difficult is you had mentioned the political arena where if the goal is to get elected into office, then you want to make enough people believe that you're the right person or that you'll do what they want so that they will give you their vote. If you're running for the city council in this city, then, you know, if the people in the side of the town that want the stop sign at this intersection have more population of, you know, voters, then maybe you'll base a lot of your platform on, and we will put a stop sign at the corner of Chestnut and Walnut, I don't know. and the other people on the other side of the city will be like, but what about our stop sign, our the timing of our street light? You know, is that not important? Like, yes, it's important, but we have more voters over here. And I think in a larger scale, when you get to the point where you have politicians going for the people that will give them their vote and give them money and everything, then you kind of get to a point where you're spread a little bit thin, making a whole bunch of promises where it's very difficult to pay them back, regardless of what you personally believe or what your opponent believes. And I think this is where a lot of people have started to see this, that, you know, in modern day political arenas, I'm hearing more and more often over the past couple decades that it's like, you know, oh, hell, it doesn't matter who you vote for, they're all the same. Or, you know, it's like, yeah, it's a popularity contest like it was in school. Whoever has the best idea, the best speech, the best campaign promises or whatever, whoever is the best speaker, has the most charisma or whatever, doesn't matter if they actually are, you know, qualified for the job or not, just how they make you feel.
Well, I think with politics, it's a whole different ball game.
Yeah.
And to some degree religion, but I think more so to politics. When I see people that are hardcore aligned, usually they're kind of pointing fingers and yelling at the opposite side. And it's not that what they believe in is I don't think it's really the bottom line that they believe in, you know, more government or less government. I think their belief is in the conflict. I think I think that I see, like, for example, Facebook, the new, it's, you know, TV's supplanted wasteland. But on Facebook, I see, and I'm on there, so I'm in the wasteland, so I'm not judging anybody. So, but there's times I'm on Facebook going, what am I doing? What is going on this place? And then I go back the next day. Anyway, so enough Facebook bashing and heralding. Anyway, I see these people that every single post is about how this party or that party or this institution or whatever is what's causing the country to go in this downward decline. And to me, it's like, it's about the fight. It seems like they're passionate about arguing and pointing against the other person. They're passionate about blaming. They're passionate about countering the other person's argument. Because if you say, do you really think you're going to win this argument? Most of them will tell you, no, I don't think so. I don't think I'm going to win that argument. I'm like, well, why are you arguing? They're arguing for the argument, you know. I wrote a song once and I had a line in it that said, chewing on golden argument. And the whole reference to that line is that sometimes that's the best part, is the arguing, not about the winning, you know, not about making and driving your point. So I think that's kind of what happens sometimes. I do want to go back to something we talked about earlier, which was that whole kind of belief building thing.
Yes.
You and I were starting to have a conversation on Facebook with some other people. We were talking about the idea that you said law of attraction. There seems to be a little bit of a contradiction for you, you said. And correct me if I'm misquoting this. But your trouble with the law of attraction is that if you can make anything happen with the law of attraction, why does it not always seem like you can if there's a certain destiny in play? So now we have to talk about, if there's a belief, where does that play into destiny? And how can you, and this is where I'm going when I led you with that question about building a belief system.
Yes.
let's take that. And I'm tossing it to you now.
Okay. Yeah, because that is one thing in my spiritual, you know, searching and, you know, trying to find out what I believe is I have a really good understanding of karma, destiny, free will, past lives, reincarnation, all this stuff. It took me a long time, but I saw how they all worked together to make, to make a balanced, harmonious type of play within a soul's journey through many lives and beyond. What I have not been able to do to this point is add in the law of attraction as it is presented by Abraham Hicks. And I say Abraham Hicks because, from my understanding and my perception, Abraham Hicks is kind of like they're the ones that kind of got the ball rolling. They were one of the first people that were talking about this, even before it was popular or before anyone actually knew about it. So for me, it's kind of like, well, okay, like you prefaced earlier, I do not believe that you can go outside of your destiny. But the law of attraction, the way Abraham expresses it, says that you can do anything, which would mean you could go outside of your destiny. For me, this causes a big problem because I find that your destiny, your life's path, is what you chose to, is kind of like the road you chose to go on when you incarnated into this physical existence for this lifetime. And if you go completely off of that, then you're basically, to use the term, you've gone off the reservation.
Okay.
You've totally turned your back on your whole spiritual soul's, like you said, all these promises, all these contracts, all these ideas, all these goals that you said to your guides and everyone else before you incarnate said, yeah, I'd like to do this, I'd like to have this experiences, I'd like to be here and there. You're basically saying, yeah, forget all that. I'm going off and doing something on my own. Well, at that point, if that happens, your guides, your higher self, everything that is there to help you guide you along the path that you had set up and chosen to do is no longer valid. Because whatever path you're going off into is not anywhere near the path that you had chosen to, and they are specialists in the path that you had chosen before you incarnated, before you came into this physical existence, into this physical body. And once you say, I want to do something completely outside of, my karma, my stars, my destiny, my life path, whatever, they're no longer the specialist for where you've decided to take your life.
Well, wouldn't other specialists come in then?
Maybe.
Well, okay, let's take an example here. Do you think it was Ted Bundy's destiny to be a serial killer?
That's more of a specific thing, and I have no idea because I believe that there's a balance. I don't know why it hap needs to be a certain way, or if it's moving into a place where it doesn't have to be the same way. But I've noticed that throughout human history, there's people that are really, really considered way out on the fringes, such as, serial killers such as Ted Bundy. For me to say, hey, it was your destiny, it was your life's path to be a serial killer, or, going back to history's big one, Hitler. Was it his life path to go along and contribute to history the way that he did? Because, he was starting off to be an artist, a painter, I believe. He could have possibly continued down that way, and I don't know his biography really well. For me to say, from my perception of somebody else, hey, that was not your life path. You deviated.
Well,
I
see,
don't know.
the reason
I
I
don't know.
pose that to you, Donald, this is because, and I will tie this back to belief, but
Okay.
if you believe that you are beholden to your destiny, then that would imply that you cannot make any choices or you cannot create a reality that is outside of what your destiny has pre-designated for you. Is that what I'm understanding? Or is that what you're grappling with understanding?
See, exactly. That's kind of what I'm grappling. It's like, if you're able to do that, then what does that mean? Because my understanding of all the contracts and help that you get from people and from the seens and the unseens, for, you know, the life path that you're on, if you are, you know, basically going on a completely different life path, completely outside of what you came here to do when you were born, then, you know, this, what are the implications of not having those people being valuable to you anymore? What are the implications of not learning the lessons that your soul has, you know, and that your spirit has come here to learn? What are the implications for your experience of that? I mean, do you become like a fugitive, or do you become like an anomaly in the whole greater spiritual soul area of the universe or existence? Or, you know, what happens and what are the implications there? And I do believe that anomalies do happen, and mutations do happen for, you know, such ways as evolution and things of that nature to enhance the experiences that a species or soul or spirit has. So there is part of me that says, yes, this should be possible in a spiritual plane as it is in a physical plane. But at the same time, I haven't been able to wrap my head around the implications of what that would actually mean. And there is the place where I'm getting a little stopped up with the law of attraction as Abraham presents it, is if you can do anything, then can you change your stars? And Abraham would say yes. And I'm saying, from my understanding at this point, at this moment, I don't believe you can.
Why would you want to?
Exactly. And this is one of the,
just because you don't want to doesn't mean you can't. What I'm saying, okay, let me kind of put it in several ways, if okay. I can, if you'll allow me.
Oh,
okay. The first part is, what's that?
I believe I will allow you to go on with your bad self or go on with your awesome self.
my awesomely bad self.
Exactly.
Or my badly awesome self, whichever way it's going to go. Well, okay, so there's several layers to this. The first one is I'm going to take the Ted Bundy analogy.
Okay.
And there are societies that do not have any concept of serial killers.
Mm-hmm.
The serial killer role was created by the society. A person born into the society that became a serial killer said, I will accept that role because I am in the society, and the society is saying, by the shape of our society, by the lessons we want to learn and the experiences we want to have as a culture, as humans in this culture, we need the serial killer for this experience because we've created our society would not be our society without the serial killer. So who's going to be the serial killer? And then you have somebody saying, I'm going to be the serial killer. What that implies is that if somebody can volunteer to step in, and there's a lot of people that hate this, I tell you. if somebody could volunteer to step in for the role of the serial killer, who would want to? I know. But apparently somebody did, because it is. Then somebody can step in and volunteer to be the victim of the serial killer.
Mm-hmm.
And I just read this quote, I think it was yesterday or today, saying that nobody's, for the person who commits the most heinous act in the world, they can't commit it on someone who doesn't align that frequency.
Oh, this whole idea got me in so much trouble when I was doing college work in college.
How so?
Because I think I was working on my belief system, and I had mentioned that something along these lines, where, well, if somebody is walking into the parking lot and they get attacked or beat up, whether it's a girl or a guy, you know, then they attracted that experience to them. And, oh my goodness, people I was working with, they're just like, are you kidding me?
Oh yeah. People get absolutely incensed by the idea because I think it implies that there's a punishment of sorts. I think it implies that wanted that to happen to them.
Yeah,
and that's not what I'm saying.
Yeah, and even the professor was there, and she came over and she was just like, so what's going on over here? You know how you kind of feel the whole attention and the energy of the room shift to one place?
Right.
Apparently, it had all shifted to me, and I was like this huge attention wormhole of just, what is this guy talking about? And so the professor came over, and, you know, she heard what we were talking about, and I have never seen so many pale white faces that were there in just pure shock of what they were hearing in such a short amount of time as the group that I was working in, the instructor, and, you know, the rest of the class. And I'll tell you, David, it gets to one of those places where this may be kind of where you're talking about earlier, where I could have had a choice of, like, you know, apparently I believe some things that are really kind of out there, and I can say, well, maybe I'm wrong and I should just, you know, let go of these beliefs and come back to what the majority believes and be happier, be able to fit in better. And I was not able to do that. I was just like, no. And I talked to my friends at the time, and they were saying, well, I think what we're having problems with is that you're saying that if this person walking to the parking lot at night gets attacked, then they're responsible for it. And I'm like, yes, that's what I'm saying. I'm like, well, no, that doesn't work. And I'm like, well, the responsibility is that they, you know, had a contract in a spiritual sense in some way, shape, or form to be the victim of that place at that time. And, you know, everyone that I talked to at that time were just like, you're saying that everything that happens to victims and stuff, that they are responsible for it. And I'm like, yes, everything that happens to you is your responsibility, because you created that area. You created whatever experience you have. And if that is true, then every single experience, whether we perceive it as good, bad, or neutral, has to be considered your responsibility of your choices and your perceptions and your belief.
Well, and I want to address on that. What I think is going on, and this is all about belief, is that yeah. people don't want to believe that, and I'm going to use a different word than responsibility, because okay. it just seems so harsh.
It is, yeah.
And I'm not disagreeing with you. I actually do agree with your concept. But what I'll say is that they sought a specific experience. Mm-hmm. And people don't like that idea, because there's a lot of people, many, 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 many people that are still in a place in their lives, and this is what we're growing out of. I believe, my personal belief is that the shift that we've heard about mm-hmm. is shifting towards understanding that we are creators of our own reality. That's where we're going, because we've been through too many ages, thousands upon thousands of years of not accepting that we create our own reality. And as a result of that, what we do is we think that somebody else is responsible for the reality as it is, and we become a victim. We say that this was imposed upon us, you see. And interestingly enough, I think the reincarnation idea, the belief in reincarnation, sometimes goes to that. Well, I'm obviously being punished in this life because of something I did in a past life. But see, there's value judgment again. We're talking about punishment. We're talking about responsibility. We're talking about all these things that seem to be imposed on by this universal code, or by this high deity, by this God, when it's not about that. It's about, if we are our own gods, and if we are the co-gods of you know, along with everybody else, we're all, you know, equal gods playing in the same playground, mm-hmm. in the same sandbox, then basically we talked about this same thing, and I agreed. One of the members of the group I'm with, and she and I, our belief systems are so closely aligned, and she had said this. She says, well, a lot of times what we do is we're spiritual beings, and the physical is just really the intense experience. We want to experience the intensity. Unfortunately, it comes with polarity. It comes with contrast. It comes with good and bad and hot and cold and feeling good and feeling terrible and pain and pleasure and all this other stuff. And you can't have one without the other, so you just get both. Mm-hmm. But, of course, we're all like, pain is great, and that's all we want to think about. And pleasure, you know, that's not about us. So as a result, what happens is, here we are in between lives, or our higher selves saying, okay, let's play a game. I'll play the perpetrator. You play the victim. How's that sound? And we're like, okay. And then we go through the experience, and we come back and have the cast party afterwards and say, oh, what did you think? Well, you were a pretty good perpetrator, because I really hated your guts through that. I know, right? You really did hate me. Yeah, yeah. It wasn't really that fun being hated, but it wasn't really that fun being, you know, beat up on either. So you have this big, like, thing, because we're spiritual. And we know that we go on forever and ever and ever. when we're in that state, we're like, well, nothing ever dies. Things change and we grow and we just kind of keep expanding rather than this kind of end all to be all stuff. So what happens is when we get in this, we forget all that. And we don't want to believe that we would actually put ourselves through it because we don't like it. Why would I put myself through this? I don't like this. But think about all the things we put ourselves through that we don't like just by our own actions and choices. And I'm going to use a real quick example is Jackie and I talk about why Vegas people cut loose and the, you know, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas and people really become this debaucherous way. Not everybody does, but a lot of people give themselves license to do so. And I say because that is a license for self-abuse. Mm-hmm. And I mean, why would you drink massive quantities of alcohol if it makes you feel absolutely awful in the morning? You know what I'm saying? But people still do it. But nobody forces them to drink the alcohol. They choose to do it. So they choose the ill effects of it later. So I'm saying, how can you believe that you're capable of choosing ill effects of bad decisions, but not capable of believing that you might do that on a higher level in a, you know, the victim perpetrator role?
Yeah. The example that I keep thinking about when you're talking about this whole, you know, before you come into a physical experience and, you know, you're having the whole party of, okay, who's going to be the perpetrator, who's going to be the victim? It sounds so much like a casting for a movie. Mm-hmm. And where, you know, before you're cast in the movie, you're in the spiritual realm, you know, your agent calls you up like, hey, we have a couple of people trying to make a movie over here and they want to have this experience and that experience. And they thought, hey, you might be up for that. So you go in and, you know, the director's like, okay, this is what's going to happen. It's going to be kind of interesting. Anyone that has done any kind of acting, you see some of the roles that people play and like, oh my goodness, that role must have been so difficult for them to play. And, you know, maybe it was. And while they were playing that role, most really good actors get into a place where they are that role while it's being shot. And that's kind of like, if I understand you correctly, that's kind of like having the body coming into this existence and forgetting, even if it's just momentarily while we're here in this life, that, oh, there's a bigger play going on. There's a bigger scene going on. And for that one moment where the scene is being shot and they're so into the character, then the character might be going, oh my goodness, why the hell would I put myself through this? Mm-hmm. And right. And then the director yells, cut, you know, tag it and bag it. That's a wrap, guys. And then all of a sudden, that's kind of like you going back into the spiritual existence and, you know, leaving your body, your physical body. And everyone's saying like, well, how did that feel? Like, whoa, I don't think I've ever been able to stretch myself in that way emotionally. And I'm very happy for the opportunity to have to even attempt to see what that would be like, what that would feel like. Mm-hmm. And yeah. And I think this is what you're talking about, where it's just like, who in their right mind would do that? And from the characters in the movie, in the play or whatever, you know, from their perspective, like, oh my goodness, why would somebody want to allow themselves to be murdered?
Well, it's a focus point. Interestingly enough, it's what you continue to focus on and why. When I was in a play, and in the play, I was a character, and one of the curtain, or a couple of curtain calls, my character, or I got booed when I was taking curtain call. When
oh,
I bowed.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, but I didn't take it personally because I wasn't getting booed. I didn't have a bad performance. They despised the character I played because he was a very, very unscrupulous character, uh-huh. Extremely unscrupulous, and he took a very sweet and innocent woman, and he basically used her, you know. Wow. and stole all her money, and they just despised this character so much, and the vitriol of people who saw that performance for that character, and all to get in the character's role, and I didn't hate this character. I didn't think of him as a bad guy. I just thought of him. Why he's doing what he's doing. What is it that's important to him, and what does he want? What is he doing? And so his choices were based on the things that he wanted so badly. And he wanted something so badly that other factors that seem important to people, like, you know, treating a sweet, innocent girl with respect and not taking her all her money that she saved for literally 15 years. He didn't consider that because that wasn't important to him. What was important was making his big dream happen. He wasn't the guy in the black hat and handlebar mustache that tied the girl to the railroad tracks. It's not like that. I mean, he really was an honest human with honest emotions. Yeah, but he just was disconnected. But the interesting thing about all of this with the play analogy is when we're sitting in this class, one of the guys looks at me, and he's very kind of a critical-minded guy. He's brilliantly psychic. He's really very intuitive, very psychic, and brilliantly so. But he doesn't take things easily. He likes proof, and a lot of psychics are funny that way. A lot of psychics like proof. They're funny. He says, you know, the one woman who's talking about past lives and how we get together, and he's just like, yeah, but, you know, we don't know that that happens for a fact. And I said, no, we don't. I believe that. I believe that that's the way it happens, but I don't know it for a fact. But I tell you this, there's something very comforting in the idea that some of the hardest things I've ever gone through in my life were there for me to learn from.
Oh, yeah.
It's very empowering. It's very empowering to know that each obstacle there was created by my higher self for me to learn from and go through. And to go back to your idea about your life path thing, mm-hmm. your destiny,
mm-hmm.
I think your destiny can change. You don't have to follow it because my belief is that every single experience we have in this world and in this lifetime is valid. It's absolutely valid. I don't think we come here, and like I said, I don't like the idea of learning things because that implies pass or fail. I like the idea that we come here to experience a thing. And if you don't, if you say, I've said I'm going to create these conditions because I want to see what they experience. Well, they could experience a million different ways depending on our choice and depending on how we take that choice. But, you know, a life path is not this, I'm going to be a lawyer or I'm going to save the world or I'm going to help starving children. It's, to me, it's I'm going to experience this emotion. I'm going to experience this feeling. And I think you do find yourself one way toward it or another.
Mm-hmm.
I think sometimes you have a life path or a destiny that you've set for yourself to experience a certain emotion. And you spend all your time trying to avoid that emotion because it keeps coming at you. You keep wanting to experience it, but you still gain something from it.
Oh, yeah.
No experience is a waste.
Yeah. Oh, and I agree with you. And just I think I mentioned it a lot more in the destiny and free will episodes, but I don't believe that there's only one road, only one destiny, only one, you know, place that everybody, you know, you have to go strictly in the lines down this one road. I think there's a many roads that you can go down, and you have a lot of wiggle room on the interstate of your destiny or life path, and you can experience all these things that you're talking about in so many varied ways, in so many different places, and with so many different people that you can find that, you know, experience that you came to, you know, have in this lifetime, and so many areas and so many different localities that, you know, a lot of people, you say destiny is like straight line from beginning to end. This is where your life is supposed to be. This is how it's supposed
why,
to go.
But why do you still struggle with the idea of it tying to law of attraction?
Because the whole idea of cutting the strings loose, cutting everything loose, you're not tethered in any way, shape, or form to this lifetime, to the whole spiritual, energetic, basically the whole reason why you were born, from my belief system of why do we exist at all? Why do we even have a spirit? Because it'd be just as easy to, you know, have non-emotional humanoid beings that, as a species that still propagated itself. So the whole spirit aspect is, if we cut ourselves free from all that, then we're literally like a free agent in the universe. And there are a lot of people that, you know, think of that idea as like, oh, well, that's kind of cool. Let me tell you something. I shifted into that reality a few years back, and it was very uncomfortable. It was very I was only there for a few months before I was like, we're getting the hell out of here.
Yeah, but remember my analogy about being dropped in a forest and giving, you know, each person getting a different set of tools?
Yeah.
To me, that's what it is. It's not about the direction you take through the forest. It's not about which way you go out of the forest. It's really about the tools. So it's, see, this is why I think you and I have a different idea of what destiny is about.
Mm-hmm.
Because destiny is, it's more like, you know, it's really about the tools. It's not what are we here to accomplish. It's not what is our purpose. It's what, how are we going to create? The bottom line is, no matter what we do, we create every single experience. When you have an experience, you're immediately, instantly creating. You're creating.
Exactly.
Yeah. Experience and creation are synonymous. So really it is what you are, is you're given the set of creative tools at birth, and you're saying, let's see what you create with these tools. And really your analogy to me is more saying, what I hear you saying with the idea of destiny and being off the path is more so, and untethered, is more you're trying to, you have a hammer, right? One of the tools you're given, a hammer. You're using the butt end of the hammer, and it's not as efficient to nail a nail with the butt end of a hammer instead of the head of the hammer. However, you know, nailing a nail is not, it's not pass or fail. You're just nailing the nail to see what it's like to nail a nail. So you don't bang it. You might get frustrated the nail's not going in straight, but you're learning how to bend a nail with the butt end of a hammer. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I see what you're saying, and I mean, we've done episodes on destiny and free will and law of attraction and stuff like that, and so I don't really want to diverge back into there too much, especially because I think we're running out of time for this episode.
Yeah.
But, with the whole belief system with me, just to paraphrase it real quickly, it's like when we're in kindergarten and the teacher comes by and is like, okay, here is clay. Make an animal. That's my understanding of your life path. Is like, oh, okay, we have the tools. The clay is our tool. And the desire and you know, our life path is to make an animal. We can choose any animal we can conceive of. You know, living, not living, fantasy, not fantasy, whatever. It doesn't matter. And from what I understand is you saying is, you know, okay, the teacher comes by and says, here's clay, and here's glue, and here's paper, and, you know, let's give one kid the paper, one kid the glue, one kid the clay, and you all get together and create something. And whatever you create, that's your experience, that's your life path.
Right.
And I see it much more ordered than that.
Interesting. So. Now, here's what is really interesting to me. How you live your life and how I live my life and the experiences that have come from that are based on those beliefs.
Exactly.
If your belief changed, your experiences would begin to change.
Mm-hmm.
And if my beliefs changed, my experiences would begin to change. So whatever that belief system for you, that ordered idea, there is a function for you in believing that the universe works that way. You're getting something out of that, and that's why you believe it. You don't believe it because it's proven true. You don't believe it because that's the way things are. You believe it because what that belief creates for you is a payoff. There's a payoff there in that belief. So for you to believe something different means that you would have to give up that payoff.
Oh, yeah.
So really, it's not a question. It's not about you believing that or me even believing this whole idea of belief. It's like, why are we believing what we believe? And that to me is the crux of it. It's the crux of really understanding our beliefs. It's not whether they're true or validating or not. It's a matter of what are they doing for us? And that is really the foundation of belief.
Exactly. And to go back to my example earlier, when, you know, I was raised in Mormonism, I was not getting a payoff from the beliefs I was being told. And so I started going over to look in and research into other things that were giving me more of a payoff than what I was brought up to have. Mm-hmm. And I mean, this goes in so many different areas. And there's one thing that I wanted to mention with the whole responsibility thing. To me, I look at it as you and your, you know, wife or friends or whatever, or spouse, if you're, you know, decide to go on a cruise. And you're like excited, you pay your money, you get on the cruise, and you all get there's this huge sickness that goes through the whole cruise. And people are saying, why they should have been, the cruise line should have done this, and they should have done that. And it's like, yes, they should have, maybe. Depends on who you believe. But I would say that you're responsible for that experience because you chose to go on a cruise on that specific one at that specific time and along those lines.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And so that's an analogy I feel like really needed to be said in this whole thing since it was brought up.
Oh, absolutely. It is what you're saying is what I believe, which is, again, you create your own reality, which is when I first stumbled upon that concept, I knew it was for me.
Yeah.
I believe it. It is so invalid. It's so inviolate and so right. I knew it was for me. And whenever I live by that idea that I create my own reality, I find great value in the life I'm living. Extreme value in the life I'm living. It really does empower me, and it becomes this great creative wellspring. But then again, the things that I grapple with that I have trouble with in my belief system,
mm-hmm.
that just really are struggles for me, those belief systems are a payoff for me yet, but I'm still working through those. I'm still trying to figure out what the payoff is, but there's a payoff.
Yeah,
definitely.
At the moment, it gives you something to chew on.
Yeah, exactly.
If nothing else, that could be the payoff.
I am a mental person. I like to kind of spin things around in my mind. So I may create things that give me things to spin in my mind.
Exactly. And I too, you know, I like to play around in my brain. It's like, okay, so I have not run into a problem yet that has given me a big payoff of really forcing me and challenging me to conceive and think in new and different ways. And then all of a sudden it's like, well, how would law of attraction fit into this whole harmonious, you know, orchestra that you've been creating and been listening to for your, you know, the past 20 years? Like, I don't know, it sounds really discordant, it sounds really odd, and it's like heavy metal or death metal being in a classical music piece. It just doesn't seem to work. And well, let's find out if it does work or whatever. And so that, I mean, for me,
I say you set up an experiment and test it, Donald. No, I'm serious.
I know.
Create like the perfect scenario, but you gotta move toward it as much as you can. And if you don't do it, then there's no payoff for you. I mean, you don't really want the answer. You're just kind of mentally, you know,
it's
playing around.
It's philosophizing.
Yeah, exactly. It's philosophizing. So, but if you're really curious, I'd say lab rat yourself.
Yeah, exactly. But then it would only be proof to me.
But what does it matter? Your life is the only one that you're living.
Exactly, exactly.
So, yeah.
So, and I think we really need to bring this episode to a close because we are a lot over time. So belief, I think this topic is one of those that we will definitely need to come back to. We might even come back to it next week or next episode and make it a two-parter. And I don't know. We'll see.
Oh yeah, yeah. It'll be showing up in other episodes. I know that. Just like destiny and free will seem to kind of like keep wanting to step in, like a, you know, like Barbie Benton from a '70s TV show as a special guest star. You
know, yeah,
keeps reappearing over and over again. You're like, oh wow, this topic again.
Or law of attraction.
Or law of attraction, that's right.
So, well, cool. So David and I would like to take this opportunity to thank all of our listeners. If this is the first episode you've listened to, hopefully we've stretched your mind and entertained you a little bit. If you're a longtime listener, we thank you for continuing to find enjoyment in David and I's conversation. We'd also like to encourage you to give feedback on anything that we've said or any episode. I'll hand it over to David to tell you where you can leave your feedback.
You can also visit us at our website. You can post comments on the actual show episode links on taketheredpillpodcast.com. You can also type in Take the Red Pill under the podcast section of iTunes, and you can subscribe to us there and download it there. Check out our brand new kind of revised website. It's pretty cool. We're pretty excited about it.
Yeah. So for Take the Red Pill, I am Don Dalton, wishing you the belief of your choice.
And I'm David Deere. Whatever you believe, you're right.